Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. My name is Francis Ford Coppola. Today on the show, we have Elmer Fudd's ghost and Frank Sinatra Jr.'s dog and Frank Sinatra's dog's friends. So, when did you first realize you wanted to be a Spanish war hero? Well, right up until you asked me. Otherwise. So this is weird. I don't know if we're on.
Actually, I think we're live, Brad. You can tell me if I'm not. Everything's normal. Somehow, I don't know. Did somehow when we were before the show, did Steve's, when he messed with his computer.
This is streaming live.
Is his computer so strong that he
actually turned down the Brian, I was prepared for this. I'm going to eat pasta.
Oh, man. What kind of, first of all, is that cavatelli?
No, I think it's Angel here. Here, have Angel. A little with our improv skills. Oh, that's a good boy. That's a good Brian.
Or I could have been, it looks like I might have been doing a blowjob too, the one I'm far away.
Well, it's the oldest trick from Brooklyn, the spaghetti in the pants trick when you're out with an Italian girl.
I love it. It's like whenever, you know, I switched to, because I wanted to lose weight, I switched to, what do they call it? Chickpea pasta.
Right.
And for the first year, I couldn't taste the difference. And then one day, I went back to regular pasta, and it was like, wow, I felt so much better.
Right.
But I gained like 3 pounds that day, you know?
Yeah, it really does make, you look great, man. I mean.
Well, I didn't shave, but, you know, I lost 35 pounds. Thank you. You know, I think you look good. You've always been svelte, you know?
Yeah, I'm svelte. You know, I worry about it. You know, Brian, it's obviously an indication of some imbalance. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. It is, what I've learned is, for some reason, this whole science has been forgotten. There are three predisposed genetic body types. Ectomorph, tall and skinny.
Right.
Mesomorph, regular, yourself. Endomorph.
Right.
Wide hips. And people argue it. They say, they think fat people are just fat. And I go, wait a second. 400 pounds is fat. People who are just heavy, like Jason Alexander had wide hips. So even on the first season of Seinfeld, people acted like he was fat. I remember sitting watching TV with a friend. He goes, he's so fat, but he wasn't fat at all. He just had wide hips. So he has a wide skeleton. So
yeah,
it's easier to gain weight when you have a wider skeleton.
Right. And it's the thing, like the same thing with animals in nature. There's no skinny hippopotami. You know what I mean? It's the nature of your body. And your body type, but we could segue into this. Society puts so much, you know, they want you to be young. They want you to be funnier when you went that. I went like this, like we rehearsed this, you know? Got it. Yeah, that's good. I feel like I'm just hanging out with you in Vegas.
Well, this is what kind of happened. I mean, the host got us together, and the host, he had us test our audio. He tested our video. And the second we start the show, the host audio and video goes out, and that was the strange, but I almost kind of prefer it.
Well, you've heard me say that things don't behave. Nothing ever behaves. Where are you now, Brian? I'm in Greenwich Village in New York City.
I'm in Los Angeles. I haven't left this room except to go food shopping since first week of March.
No way.
I have, I really wish that I had now that I'm 40, I'll be 47 next month. But now I always chose my career over girls. So, for example, if a girl wanted to go on a trip, I'd be like, oh, I got shows that weekend.
Hello.
And I never canceled shows. I wish now I had, because being alone in my apartment for 6-7 months, I'm jerking off to the guy in the Pringles can. You know what I mean? I'm losing my mind. Anything turns me on now. I lay down to go to sleep. And I'm like, well, I got a heart on him. How do I have a heart on just because a pillow is up again? I'm like, well, come on. Like, I am so fucking lonely.
But do you think it's loneliness, or do you think because you and I are not running around? People, I always tell people the hardest part of being a comedian at a certain level is getting to the audience. It's just showing up. Hey, who's this guy interrupting us?
I think I got gremlins. I think that's what
It's crackly.
I'm crackly?
Yeah. Very crackly.
I think it's the beard. I would go shave. So, Brian, I found that now that I'm not running around so much, I have less anxiety. I think I'm more virile. I think it's the lack of anxiety.
Well, I'm definitely happier. But now that it's been 7 months, I'm like, I wouldn't mind getting laid. I have no more money. My money's all gone because I've used it up for 7 months. Right. So I'm like, now I have to work. And I was really enjoying not working. But now I have to work. But I have MS. I have no immune system. So
You have to be super careful. And, you know, we haven't spoken about this, but my grandmother had amyolateral sclerosis.
Wow.
And it was very bad. So for her, I do a joke about it. So for people that are easily offended, keep watching. I said she had Lou Gehrig's disease, yeah, which she did. But
just died of that May 28th.
We know how to get a show off to a start, you and I. Yeah, Brian. You know what I feel? If anyone's still watching, they're going to love our comedy.
Dougie show without Dougie.
If I can get a word in edgewise, fellas, how do I sound now?
Better.
Hold on. All of a sudden, now I'm the sound guy. I got that for you. All right. So listen, go into systems and I want you to go to input and turn your sound down.
This is the moment where we, so welcome, fellas. Welcome to the show. Thank you, by the way. See, it would take two veteran professionals to be able to carry that on, which was probably better than the first 15, 10 minutes, whatever it was we've been doing, actually 8 minutes. So I'm glad I sound okay. Good.
Sound nice.
We got into death for a while, so I don't know how we did, but
we'll come back to that because can I still do my Lou Gehrig's disease? My grandmother had Lou Gehrig's disease, but she still managed to hit 250 in her last year's at bat. But her base stealing went down. But come on, she had Lou Gehrig's. by the way, also I actually we don't all enjoy chatting with each other, but Brian and I seem to always just are comfortable chatting.
Yeah, well, I think we started around the same time.
I used to see you at the Boston Comedy Club. And
so there's like a camaraderie there that we can't see each other for 10 years and it'll be the same.
Yeah, plus I think you're a little more vocal about the gripes. Everybody thinks I'm so happy about everything. And then you'll come over and say, what the fuck is going on here? And I'll go, yeah, man, you know what I mean. And I'm like...
Well, that's what's great about... I'm sorry, Doug, but that's what's great about New York comics is that if I share my sentiment in any other state about what's going on the stage, they get mad at me. I remember I was playing, I'm sorry, Doug, but I was playing fucking Peoria. And this guy had a banjo on stage. And I remember saying, usually he was my opener. And I remember saying, usually the openers don't play musical instruments. And then the guy gets off stage, somebody tells him I was griping, and he gets mad at me and yells at me in front of the whole staff. So I was like, I'm not coming back to this room. It's just like, if, and then I told Mark Marin about it, he goes, well, what you should have said was, when the guy said to me, I hope one day when I become a headliner, I'm not as bitter as you. I was like, all right. And then Mark Maron said, you should have said, yeah, but no matter what, you're still a banjo comic. But Maron is a New York comic, so he understands that we're not mad. We're just talking about the situation.
And I also think there's a certain healthy amount of grouchiness because we're running to the gig. If you're a headliner, you got to wait an hour to go on. Sometimes there are three shows on a Saturday night, you know, and you get grouchy. I do.
Yeah.
You're getting shit on. Well, I hate to bring it up. How do we enter this? Not to mention, unless you have a name, you do get shit on a bit.
Yeah. And it's like, we're responsible. It's our name on the poster. It's our show. People are coming to see us. And if I want a guy with a banjo on before me, I can say that. But if I didn't sell enough onion rings, then I can't say that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, welcome to the Doug Show. This is Doug.
Yeah, thank you.
And now, late night with Dougie Alameda. Here's Dougie.
This is the only show where the host shows up 8-10 minutes into the show.
I think that's genius.
Yes. Well, you know what? Hey, it's you can do anything now. It's 2020. Nothing's crazy. As you say it, that banjo player wasn't Steve Martin, was it? That
would Steve Martin was a headliner. Steve Martin wasn't the opener.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
And also, what about the what about the opening acts complaining about the headliners?
Exactly.
I would keep my fucking mouth shut and just be glad I'm on the show.
Yeah, so I don't go back to the club in a way to almost punish the club for that, you know.
I'm not at that level. I'm not at that level.
Oh, I didn't punish them at all, really. They're fine. They're doing better than I am.
In your mind, you punished them.
I had to do something to stand up for myself. That's all.
But you, I got a lot of visual aids.
By the way, Steve had mentioned it, and I think that is it's interesting because one of the topics we were going to plan to talk about today was the process of making decisions. But you guys are veterans in this business, and you know what? I'm like you, Brian. I'm a bit outspoken. When something goes wrong, I don't sit there and take it in and think the best. Sometimes I just say, hey, what the fuck, you know. So I'm a bit like that. Steve is a little more reserved in that sense, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell the truth, Dougie, you know.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's interesting because those are just two different people. That's two different ways of handling things, and they both have their pros and cons on both sides, for the receiver and for the person pulling it out, right?
Yeah, but people tend to like, which I understand, they tend to like people who don't cause issues, and I get that. But if my job is to travel to every room in the country, and your job is just to stay in that one room, then maybe what I have to say by looking at all your competition is what could be helpful to how to make your room better. Because I've seen how it's done in every... That's why I think the improvs are the best. The improvs have bouncers on both sides of the stage. The improvs drop the checks 20 minutes into the headliner's set, not the first minute, not the last minute, right in the middle. The improvs do it the best. Unfortunately, they don't hire me because I'm Brian Scalaro.
You know what? Can I say something? A real comedian has to fuck up. In my part, I don't care. A real comedian has to get in trouble. If you're the Three Stooges and you're being hired to be exterminators, you know you're going to destroy that house. A real comedian has to have a little bit of, you know, that like complaining in them. Plus, you know what? There is a responsibility. You're closing the show. I'm on stage at a club. I won't mention it. And the fucking feedback amp is not on. Okay. Yeah. I can't hear myself.
Yeah.
The microphone is too low because they've decided. By the way, 20 minutes in, I'm crushing. And all of a sudden, I'm getting mediocre laughs. After 20 minutes, I'm getting, and I'm, what the fuck is going on? I go, did you turn the mic down? And after the show, I found out, well, you know, we thought you were too loud. Well, the audience was fucking laughing.
Exactly. That's happened to me because I do sound effects a lot. It happened to me constantly. By the way, do you have a ghost or is that a cat that's coming in and out of your door?
Which one of us? I have a cat.
You have an Annabella doll that you didn't tell us about?
What's an Annabella
doll? I got a little scared. I thought I was watching Paranormal Caught on Camera. I fucking love that show. Yeah. Anyway, Doug, will you please say something?
I'm like an amateur comic trying to get a guest spot on the show.
Hey, no, you know what? That's not true. You want to know something? The best hosts, I was told recently, are the ones that listen. And you're, believe me, Dougie, I know who you are. And somebody's going to, we're just getting off to a good start. You're going to have to wrap this. I'm out in about 7 minutes. You're going to have to talk for an hour.
I have to take another shit in probably five. So.
Yeah, really? What do I do? You know what would be funny? If I get toilet paper and hand it to you before you leave.
Okay. That would be disgusting.
Then you could
anyway, Doug, I'm sorry. Please, it's a little hard to hear you. Okay.
We'll have one of those YouTube moments where Steve hands you the toilet paper. And you grab your own toilet paper and pull it off your screen.
Yeah. I actually read the notes for tonight's show. And after I read the notes, I said, this could be a really great show. Am I allowed to give away that there is some nudity involved tonight?
There is in our topics, in our conversation, we'll make it funny because we like to bring up stories from around the world. There seem to be a lot of, how would you say, raunchy type stories, right? There's a lot of nudity. There's a lot of... defecation. There's a lot of poo-poo, pee-pee, poo-poo, dick-ween. There's a lot of symbols and stuff.
I didn't see any of that. I didn't know we got any of that.
You know, Brian, even though my theme is don't behave, I have to try and misbehave because behaving and being responsible was beaten into me as a child.
I understand. But I didn't even know that was sent to us.
Yeah,
that's all right. You wouldn't really read it anyway. Listen, if you and I were hanging out tonight, We would have fucked. I know when we got the email, Brian, you and I would have been fucked. That let's go to the bar.
The funny part is,
it's sort of all over my computer.
When I sent the outline, I figured, first of all, I should just even see if they read it, because I'm going to put just like I'm going to write it in Klingon, you know, like even see if they even pay attention to it.
You should have written something like Steve Marshall sucks, so you found out whether I read it or not.
Yeah, it's funny. Brian Scar might have Down syndrome.
In this next episode.
I feel like we hijacked your thing, but it was more of like a way to save it. Now it can't stop. So
yeah.
Please.
Yeah, no, right, exactly. Well, you know what? Dougie, how's the sound guy doing right now?
Is he killed himself?
Like Steve had mentioned, you know, that's what a good host knows how to do. When a train wreck is happening, sometimes you just let it flow down.
Let it happen.
Let it happen.
That's what Letterman was good at. Letterman was great at that. Letterman was the best interviewer ever. The way when he saw something bad happening, he just kind of let it happen, and he made his little comments. He never tried to control it.
And you know, Letterman showed disdain for people. I think when I watched him when he was on the 10 a.m. show, but when he was first on at 12:30.
12:30.
I think the moment where I really got him and others, he had Nastassja Kinski on. I don't know if you remember it, and Nastassja Kinski had a beehive haircut. And she's talking about nothing for like 10 minutes. You can see Dave is bored. And finally he stops and goes, what's the deal with your hair? And it was so rude. But it's like, you know when somebody keeps heckling you? I like to give the heckler three strikes. So then when I bury them, the whole audience is on my side.
Yeah, exactly. That's I like to do that as well.
I miss David Letterman. That was a great show.
It was.
You know what I mean? Do you watch much late night TV now?
Not anymore. I stopped. And I don't want to insult them. Part of it is because they don't have like the older comedians on. Letterman always had George Miller. He'd bring Brian Regan out. Yeah. He'd bring like older comics out. A lot of the other shows just bring young comics out who have 5 minutes of material. And I'm like, all right. And then also I just get I liked Letterman. I liked the Conan show, but I just feel like they tamper their acts sometimes to be more accepted by everybody. And when they do that, they lose me. I like it when people are themselves, not when they tamper their act to make everybody happy.
And I like to see a risk. I think part of the fun of going to see live comedy is there's always a risk. And I think Letterman was one of those guys you just waited for him to take that risk about somebody's hair or tell somebody and they were full of shit.
Yeah. There was definitely a moment where you thought it could just turn like, you know, it didn't have that. It had that feel. Yeah. You know, one of the topics actually when the structure part of the show was making decisions. You know, Brian is an actor. So making decisions is an important aspect.
Yeah.
An actor, right?
Yeah.
As a comedian, Steve, it's an important thing when you make decisions on stage at the moment when you're reading the audience. And since I'm with you, I'll, as a fighter, and Steve knows in martial arts, we always bring the two together, that you have to have that as well, right? You have to have that ability, right, to make decisions. Hey, I'm not going to throw that jab again. You know, that guy has that overhand right that's clobbering me. So, you know, what are some decisions you think you guys have made that you look back on? Like, even if it doesn't, whether it's good or bad, you just look back at it because you know it was one of those decisions in your life.
I had to make a few choices. The one that is the most controversial because not everybody agrees with it is that when I grew up, I wasn't fat, but I was soft. I remember when we would play football and one guy had pecs at 13. He's not going to the gym. You know what I mean? He just has jeans where he has pecs. You know what I mean? So when people walk around with pecs now, I'm like, yeah, calm down. I also know that you have those genes, and I don't. But either way, when I was growing up, John Candy never got made fun of for his weight. Never. Sure, there's the joke about the pants at the end of Summer Rental. Sure, there's the joke about the pizzas and stripes. But really, that's it. He had a whole career where his weight never came up. So when I was on one sitcom, and they were pounding me about my weight, I spoke up, and it and a lot of people, and they didn't want me around anymore because I spoke up. I was only a guest, recurring, not a regular. So they don't like guest roles to speak up, which I understand. But I volunteered to leave, and they said, no, stay. But then because I spoke up, the telephone game, it got worse and worse. It got worse and worse as people talked to each other about it. When I didn't say it angry. But because I spoke up, that was something that a lot of people were like, well, why don't you like fat jokes? I'm like, well, John Candy had a whole career. Oliver Platt's fat. Never comes up in any of his movies. I was like, why do I have to accept it if I don't want to? LaWanda Page on Sanford and Son did not mind. They made fun of her looks. Did not care. I care. So why do I have to become something that I'm not? Can't they write other things? Like the first episode, I had 5 kids and 3 wives. And then 7 episodes later, I had never been laid before. In their mind, fat people can't get laid. But meanwhile, my girlfriend in real life was 1,000 times better looking than every writer's wife that came to see the show.
Why don't you bring her? Why don't you bring her? Did you bring her on set and say, hey, look at my girl?
Yeah, did you say, Brian, they were pressuring you to lose weight?
No, they wanted to make fun of my weight all the time. And that was, I have enough experience to know that once they make a fat joke, that's all they'll do because it's the easiest joke to do. So I spoke up because I didn't speak up and ask them to change. I volunteered to leave because I didn't want any hard feelings. And they said, no, they like you, stay. So I stayed. And then next thing I know, they were mad at me because people began to speak about what happened and behind my back, and it got worse and worse. You know, in telephone games, someone whispers in your ear, your grandmother likes seashells. And then by the time it goes around the table, it comes back that your grandmother fucked a Nazi. You know what I mean? So it just got worse and worse.
Both can be true. Both can, yeah. She could like seashells and fucking, but because, you know, it always comes back. You started the show off tonight with he's trouble. He's trouble because he said something. He's, you know what I mean? Trouble, you know? Exactly. Heaven forbid you open your mouth and you go, I need the microphone to be a little louder at first and I'll modulate it down.
Yeah. But the thing is that I understand the other people's viewpoint that it's best not to say anything. But I wish they would understand mine, that I didn't say anything bad. I just voiced the concern.
So was that a bad or a good decision that you said something?
It's right now it's bad because I have no money. But 2 years ago, it was a great decision. I mean, I went from that show to Mad Men. You know what I mean? So it was like, I was like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Mad Men hired me, and I know every single one of them watched that show. So it's like, it's good and bad to every decision. Like, things always change. And what happens is, like, when I first started comedy in L.A., when I moved to L.A., the Comedy Store was not great, and the Laugh Factory was the best. 7 years later, the times change. Now Comedy Store is great, and Laugh Factory is okay. You know, it's like you always have to be nice to everybody because you don't know who's going to come up and down. You know, it's like it's just. So what's a bad decision right now? It might be a good decision 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. So you never know.
Ultimately, time can only tell. But you know, here's the thing: if that's who you are, right, Steve. I mean, you got to stick to the way you are. Like, I know when I met my wife, I was always like, I'm an open book. I'd share my emotion, my feeling with everything. And my wife basically said to me one time, "Hey, shut the fuck up. You know, you talk too much. You know, and like you said, it's almost a telephone game as well, where you just basically say, "Hey, I easily get upset about things. One person, the next person, next person. Hey, Doug's a pussy," and you know what I mean. And so I definitely think that's a you know, I made a decision when I didn't go far away when I went to college. Yeah, I think about that decision. I had a girlfriend, so instead of going away and worried about being too far from my girlfriend.
Yeah. And that girlfriend's now gone, right?
Yeah, she's dead, actually. Thanks, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we're going into necrophilia? Wait, I read that on this thing. Plus, Dougie, you made the big decision to become a comedian. I mean, it's not something you did when you were 17 or 18 or 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look back to that, you know, walking away from a nice big salary.
Yeah.
But you would appreciate this, Brian, but I don't wear suits anymore. You know,
I hate suits.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Those are the things. No more Monday morning conference calls.
Yeah. And now that I'm fat, none of my suits fit. So I don't want to get close to people. I don't want to get too close because I may get invited to a funeral or a wedding. So I'm like, I can't. So I'm like, how's your mother doing? Oh, she's not well. I'm like, well, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah.
I don't like this relationship up because I don't have a suit that fits.
I'm going to be doing some missionary work in South America for the next 8 months, buddy. I hate it. You know,
choosing comedy was a great choice for 20 years. I had neglected to know that they, as Dana Gould said, I love Dana Gould. He said, Comedy Central. He goes, I'm 55 years old, or in Comedy Central terms, deceased. They do not give a shit about older comics. And I should have looked. The people that were big when I was a kid, Bob Nelson, all those guys, they don't, you barely see them on the road anymore because nobody gives a shit. They only want to hear new people. And I wish I had known that when I started, because I would have, when I was on television, I should have come up with some other ways as a backup for later on to save some money. But I thought it was going to keep going forever. I didn't know the writer's strike was coming. So I made a couple bad decisions, and comedy might have been one of them. I had a good 25 years.
Yeah. Hey, listen, man, I really think that because of this virus and because we are chilling out at home now, I think we're going to come out of this. You know, I always said this, you know, the comedians were supposed to move out of the comedy clubs and then you become a draw. You know, you go on TV, get in the mood, you become a draw. I mean, I never saw comedy as something that I think I'll do it. I'll make 70 grand a year. You know, it's like you don't become a professional boxer to get the shit beaten out of you. You know, you want to be a winner. So yeah. I think now, because you can hold the stage, you know, guys like you, and I'm going to say Rich Voss, if I was managing you, I'd be like, nobody's going to open for this guy. He's going to come out and we're just going to say Brian Scalero, and you're just going to go out and do your show. And you're going to do an hour and 15 minutes, and we're going to put you in theaters. And if a comedy club wants you, you know, you don't have to do 9 shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I want to do theaters. I wish that I was famous enough to do theaters, because they're sober, they're not drunk, they're not yelling things out. Mm-hmm. People always ask me, do you like acting or stand-up better? And I go, acting, because there's no bachelorette party on the set of fucking Grey's Anatomy. You know what I mean? I can do my fucking lines. It's not babysitting to me. Yes, we have to have the talent to deal with a heckler. But Steve and Doug, have you noticed that about 5 years ago, if you had a weekend of 5 shows, a heckler showed up 1 out of 5.
Yes.
Now they show up 4 out of 5. When you have a show with no heckler, you go back to the hotel and go, wow. I grew up watching George Carlin and Chris Rock and Bill Cosby. There were no fucking heckles. You watch their hour special.
And I'll tell you why. Because the MC comes out, they put the weakest person as MC, not realizing that the MC might have to be the strongest person. I remember Paul Reiser MCing. I remember Carol Leifer MCing. Wow. Richard Belzer. Mike Sweeney, who was the head writer for Conan for years, was considered the best comedy club MC, or one of the best ever.
Right.
And the MC doesn't know what they're doing. They're talking to the audience. Within 3 minutes, they're talking about anal beads. Then 5 seconds later, they're talking about rape. And you have to know, if you're bringing up a monologist, some comedians don't even know when I say what a monologist is. Someone that does an act without playing with the audience. And it's more like Jerry Seinfeld. Set up punchline. Set up punchline, or a storyline where your part is to sit back and listen.
And so that's why Steve Martin quit. And another reason it happens is because every TV show or every movie ever made that has a stand-up comedy scene in it has a heckle scene.
Right.
Like if Carlton on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air decided he wanted to be a comedian for one episode, they throw in a heckle scene. So that's why.
Wasn't it in The Nutty Professor with Eddie?
Yeah, everything. And even the movie Punchline, it all happens. It's always a heckle scene. So they think, people watching that think that's what our job is, to be yelled at.
And also today's audience disagrees with you. In other words, what I'm saying is, we used to watch a comedian. If we didn't agree with what he was saying, his point of view, we didn't hate him. I came out of Broadway Comedy Club one night and he said, listen, I'm just going to begin this way. I'm pro-abortion. I'm liberal. You know what I mean? I'll give you all the reasons to walk out right now. But because being funny doesn't, they don't even wait for you to get funny anymore. If you begin with a code word, a buzzword that they don't like, you know, if I come out and I say, hey, everyone, I was wearing a mask today, you know, like, oh, whip, pussy.
You know, how did masks become political? It's so crazy to me. So crazy.
Yeah.
The thing that could have saved lives became political. That's right. You know, nobody in my building wears a mask. I'm the only fucking person who wears a mask in my whole building. Actually, there's one couple.
And you know what? One year from now, you will own the building. You'll be the only one in the building.
It's really crazy. Anyway, Doug, I'm so sorry. What's next? What's your next question that becomes depressing? That we can change and make depressing.
I could lead a horse of water. That's a water. You're in LA though, because there is a mass exodus. I was just speaking with Jimmy Schubert today, who's moving to Florida.
He is. Wow, yeah. He's like the third comedian to move to Florida.
Yeah. So
Schultz just did it. Steve Simone just did it. Yeah. Now Jimmy Schubert.
And I'm moving to North Carolina, so I'm going to make some room for people.
Are you moving to North Carolina? You're not moving to North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm moving to North Carolina.
Why?
I think it's my wife wants to. And
oh, there you go. That's it.
You know what I mean? There you go. Yeah. I thought that's a simple.
That makes sense.
I'm sick of the heat, man. It's so hot here. It's getting like unbearable in the summer.
I always like that that line in The Office where he goes, James Spader goes, you don't want to move to Florida. It's hot. It's wet. There's bugs. It's the basement of America.
Oh, God.
That's a great one.
We may want to work Florida again, you and I.
I love playing Tampa. I liked Fort Myers. I like Miami. I had a good time in Miami. Everybody was so nice. When Doug brought me to Miami, I had such a great time, you know?
Well, you know why I like the Florida audiences? Because first of all, I used to believe that if you were going to be a comedian, you should be in New York, Los Angeles, or Florida, because a lot of people like Brian Regan came from Florida.
Yeah.
Todd Barry came from Florida. I think Eddie Brill was originally from Florida. And Florida was a good place. Well, who else?
Tom Rhodes.
Yes, yes. And Tom Rhodes. And Florida was a good place for New York comedians to realize if you talk about the subway, they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So it was a good, to me, Florida was a good place if you wanted to do TV, to learn be specific, do what you want to do, but it was universal. Plus, Florida had this party atmosphere. I can't tell you on Saturday night in the old days how many strippers were in the audience, and they would listen to you, but for what I do on stage, I like a little bit of a party as long as they're listening.
Yeah,
so exactly. I like Florida.
Yeah, I've had nothing but good shows in Florida except for one. And that was not, it was the fault of the club. You know, it was just, I'll never forget it. At one point, it was a restaurant. And I didn't know that when I said yes. At one point, the waitresses would come in and then the one table that was there started putting their food in to-go boxes during my show. And they weren't listening. So I just went out in the audience with the microphone and started scooping their food into the go boxes for them. And one guy wouldn't show up, so I just gave him the microphone and I left. I left. I walked to the hotel. I just gave the microphone because he wouldn't stop talking. And it was funny, but it was not. It's not like I got on a fucking airplane. They think I just showed up. I got on a fucking airplane for this. Shut the fuck up. I traveled for 8 hours to talk to you. Can you just stop talking?
Anyway. Yeah, I think there's a misnomer that, you know, I know this is hard to believe, everyone, but do you know that some people who come to a comedy show might think we're just naturally funny, which we might be, and that the stuff is not written or prepared?
Yeah. My favorite is, why can't I call you a fat ass? You're a comedian. I'm sorry, did I make fun of you? No. So what makes you think that's what I... It's like, that, like there's so many ways. Like, there's Dennis Miller comedy. There's Eddie Griffith comedy. You guys, Mike, Steve Martin comedy. And there's Robin Williams comedy. Everybody's different. But they all think we're the same, and that people who are comedians are depressing. And at first of all, I want to go, wonder why, dealing with people like you all the time. It's really, why are you fucking making us all the same? Just because one comedian killed himself doesn't mean I'm going to.
We're back to killing. Killing.
Right.
Okay, I'd like.
What's next?
I'd like you to do Scared Straight for audiences, where we lock an audience in a room with you for an hour, and you just fucking shit. Shut the fuck up when I'm on stage.
I'd never do that. That'd be great.
Let me ask
you. Yeah, you got to be charming. But my point is, when they leave it up to us to police the room, we take the risk of becoming unlikable. So hire a bouncer.
Yeah,
get a big giant guy, give him $50. You can afford $50, and have him stand there for 2 hours.
Someone's got to go over to somebody and put their hand on the shoulder and say, "You got to shut up."
Yeah, that's it. If you leave it up to us, I can make fun of a guy 7 times, but after the 8th time, it's no longer my responsibility.
Yeah, my famous story was at in a club in Daytona, which is notoriously not policed, and this guy was nonstop, like you said, nonstop. Did everything in the book to try to get the guy to shut up. And at the end, I lost it, and I told the guy, "I'm going to jump off stage and beat your ass." And the guy stands up; he had a fake leg. And he goes, "Let me take off my fake leg." You know, everybody's like sad. All of a sudden, some guy in the back of the room goes, "Sweep the leg, Dougie."
That's funny.
It is. Now, you know, let me ask you: it is true. You know, this is an up and down business. This is a bipolar industry in the comedy world, and because you have that with audiences, right? You have not all. You have a great audience. You have a bad audience. You have a good show. You have a bad show. How much does that mess with our psyche? How much does that affect?
Okay. And plus, our job is to look at, Chris Rock said this, if we look at a situation, we immediately look at it through training that we don't even realize. We immediately look at it from every aspect. Like, you know, Dave Chappelle hears something in the news, he goes, "I'm known as a victim blamer because I look at the situation and go, well, what did she say?" You know, we are trained to look at a situation and go, how did it get this way? So we see the dark side. We wind up seeing the dark side of things. Like, this happens because this happens. Where most people just go, "Oh, that happened." But we look at it like, why did that happen? And what's funny about it? So we see dark sides of things. So that also makes us kind of, you know, not depressed, but I don't know, just more aware of the negativity of the world. But we have to find it. We find it funny. Like when, who's the guy who hosts Family Feud? The black guy with the mustache.
Yeah, Martin. What's his name?
Not Martin. You know.
Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey.
He said on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. He goes, "When tragedy happens in America, I got news for everybody. We got the jokes that night, but we don't do them yet because we write them immediately because we see what's funny about the situation. Like when there was a shooting." In El Paso, I love El Paso. I love the people in El Paso. They're so sweet. I never had a problem there. They're great, wonderful people, man. I fucking love. And I've been in that Walmart probably 10 times. And so when they got shot in Walmart, I was very upset. And then about 2 hours later, I said, "Well, it would have made more sense if the guy went to Target because he had a gun." And then that's not a joke I can do. You know what I mean? But I saw what was funny about the horrible situation immediately, but I probably know some of the people who got killed. So it's just weird. But our brains are wired after 25 years that it just,
I don't know. I'll tell you what it is, because growing up, I didn't tell people to go fuck themselves. So if I would have told them to fuck, I'm being serious. If I would have told them, I was so picked on, you know, even at home, if I would have told them to go fuck themselves. So I tell everybody, you know, there's so much talk about protesting. I'm not being political. I'm a politically incorrect comedian, not a political comedian. But joking was my way of protesting. It had nothing to do with making a living.
No.
That's how I protested, by saying what I wasn't supposed to say and making it funny.
Well, and it's amazing. This is how the business is. And, you know, I did an outdoor show on Saturday night, which was brutal.
Was it?
Oh, it was. It was in the cul-de-sac, but you know, anytime you get to do something, it's worth it. It's a challenge, right? As a comic.
What was brutal about it? Well, I haven't done an outdoor show yet, so I don't know.
It was here in South Florida, and it was like 90 degrees, but felt like 150. The people were basically anywhere between 15 to 20 to 50, 80 yards away from you. You know, you're outdoors, you know, so you can't hear them if they're like, so you have no idea.
Yeah.
There was just that one moment in the show. I said, "Everybody having a good time?" And I heard some drunk guy somewhere in the back go, "I haven't laughed once." I just started laughing. And normally in a club, I would have been like, whatever. I'd have been, But I was sitting there as sweat was dripping down to the crack of my ass.
Yeah.
I'm standing there, I'm comfortable, and I'm like, oh, you know, I got paid. How much is it? And, you know, okay, whatever. And all that's going through my mind. I just went, ugh. Like, you know, I didn't want to that was my impression of Rich Voss, by the way. Ugh.
Him and Jim Norton would do it all the time, like 20 years ago. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was just that moment because that's what happens.
You know, there's one club in Florida that's mad at me because I mentioned it was hot. I didn't mention it was hot because of your room. I mentioned it was hot because it's Florida. It's just the opening of my Florida set where I talk about how it's hot. I have hot jokes. So that's all. But they were like, but you made fun of the club. I go, no, I didn't. I made fun of the fact that it's hot. But they were like, but I was like, I didn't know your AC was broken. It's not, you know. So they were like, well, when you mention it's hot, when you mention it's hot, the audience feels hot. I go, it's Florida. I was making a joke about Florida being hot.
Oddly enough.
Don't they know it's you, Brian? When you're coming in, don't they know your personality? Dougie, don't they know your personality before they hire you?
Well, you would think, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because Brian, though, he had the same problem up in Alaska, but it was because everybody thought he was talking about the owner's wife.
Brian who?
I was trying to add a little humor on my end since I got.
I didn't understand. They were talking about me?
Well, I'm saying, oddly enough, you had the same problem, but for a different reason. In Florida, you got in trouble because you said it was hot because the club was hot. But in Alaska or in Canada.
Awesome. His wife got it.
Yeah, a little.
I just thought it was another bad story about being on the road that I didn't know about. I'm like, no,
what the hell?
Yeah, happened? Go ahead. I was just going to say, but I always hear, you know, Brian, I always hear, you know, comedians hear, not everybody gets talked about, but whenever your name comes up, I swear to God, it's always like, oh, that guy's so funny. I love that guy. I'm not just saying this to kiss your ass. That's all I fucking hear. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then, yeah, well, Brian, I was working with Brian. I talked to Brian. Brian texted me. Brian's so funny. Oh, you should have seen what Brian did the other night. So the audience is fucking, for the most part, enjoying it.
No, I feel like I have more positive than negative stories, but there are probably about four clubs that absolutely hate me, but they hate me because of their own failures as a club. What we were talking about before we started, and I hate to get negative. They, like, if they don't realize that, you, like, if you drop the check on the last, there's one club, they dropped the check on the last joke. So when I'm dropping a check means they gave the checks out to the audience on the last joke. So if you, why would you do that? If the entire show is building, they get the money, like, why would you do that? So I happen to say something to the owner. Turns out, the head waitress is the owner's wife. So she got mad. Now I'm not welcome back. So there are about four clubs that absolutely hate me. So I know there's some people that hate me out there. I know that.
So what do you do? There has to be a point, like, that would eat away at me. Because there's times I've done something like that. Because I've done that. I spoke up. But there's times where it cost me, in a sense. I'm like, well, fuck, why can't I just shut the fuck up once in a while?
Yeah, we should be able to shut up. But also, I mean, it's not totally our fault, you know. Well, it's like that, because if we were Dave Attell, if we were Jeff Ross, if we were Brian Regan, and, like, you know, Andrew Dice Clay says, if I see one check, this is what he says: if I see one check being dropped during my show, I'm going to get off stage.
Wow.
Now, why do they accept that from him and not us? Answer simple: because he sells out. So really. Wow. See, when I first started comedy, I started the Comedy Cellar. The owner was Manny Dwarman. I loved Manny Dwarman. Loved him. He started using me so much, I was able to move out of my parents' house. This is a great story. So one day I went to Manny and I said, thank you. He goes, for what? I go, you use me all the time. Now, thanks to you, I can move out of my parents' apartment. And he goes, no. Never thank a club owner. He goes, you do a good job. The audience comes back. So I make money. And you make money. It's a business. Because never thank a club owner. So I grew up in the comedy world thinking that's how everyone thinks. Unfortunately, that's the exact opposite of how everyone thinks. You know what I mean? Most comedy club owners do not care if you're funny or not. They only care about the amount of seats you sell. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it's a crazy business. And we hope it comes back. It's been nuts. And hey, it's easy. You know, like, I've got to that point, this whole thing, people are saying, hey, I could do something for my studio in my house. Why the hell do I want to get on a plane and fly all the way across the country to have somebody, you know, yeah, call me a fat fuck, you know, on stage. Yeah. It's nuts. By the way, guys, this has been fun. We covered some of the topics, which is great, but you guys,
we're not ready. Okay.
You guys really came through. But it's time for our show where we call a segment called Make It Funny. That's right. It's time to make it funny. Here's where we got some stories. And as Steve would know, because Steve is a studious person. He was an accountant, you know, so he's very analytical. He measures the balances, the checks, assets minus liabilities equals equity, right, Steve?
Correct.
Okay.
I was using my accounting voice so Brad, our sound man, would be happy.
But here's, we got some stories, and you know, these sometimes are headlines. I know you both. I don't know you guys as topical comics. I don't think I ever heard either of you tell a topical joke.
No, because it runs out. You can only use it for 5 months.
You know why? Because we're the topic. When you come to see me or Brian, we are the topic. When you go to see Steve Martin, the old days, you're going to see Steve Martin. I'm not big on observational comedians. You know, tell me, oh, did you ever notice this? Yeah, I did. I want, notice me.
Yeah.
Great point. Well, here in Florida, there's a little story. Watch a Florida city new welcome sign erected is in the wrong city.
Really?
Yeah, a new sign.
Good. That's it. He made it funny.
Yeah. Just passing through Tampa. All of a sudden it says Cleveland. A new sign welcoming travelers to Florida city is drawing attention, raising controversy because it's in the wrong city. Clive Taylor, a Hollywood activist and vice president, says that when he lives in Hollywood, he doesn't want to come home to see a sign that says, welcome to Dania Beach.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So here's an idea. Take the sign down. I mean, just a thought. It shouldn't even be a news story. The fact that Muhammad Atta's fucking visa got approved 4 months after 9/11, mistakes happen. You know what I mean? Out of all the stories that come out of Florida, that's the shittiest one. Because that's, you know what I mean? If anything happens in Florida, it's usually they have that one website, the top 100 things, crazy things that happen in Florida. That wouldn't even make the top 500. Florida's ridiculous. It's crazy. It's crazy. I love it, though. It's crazy.
So you're saying it's slow? It must be a slow day in Florida news.
If that's what the news story is. I mean, the fact that guy might have been on meth, he might have been. The fact that this alligator is walking through the street is, you know what I mean? I would be food for an alligator. I don't know.
I would call that extremely local news when a guy is reporting about a sign that's on the corner where he lives.
Yeah. Take the sign down.
Yeah. Replace it. I think it's a story. It's a nice story when they have like school crosswork and they misspell the word school. You know, that's a funny
story. But this is like the Leno show.
Let's get into a little more. Asylum seekers, boat full of migrants land on nudist beach. And naked sunbathers offer them drinks, hot drinks.
Who lands on nudist beach?
Asylum seekers, people who are refugees on a boat trying to get out of...
And you know what the funny thing about that is? These poor immigrants who landed on the nude beach had less clothing on than the nudists.
Why are you guys overdressed?
People who go to nude beaches are not people you want to see at nude beaches. You know what I mean?
Like, they should sell clothing at nude beaches because that's all you're thinking. I've gone to nude beaches. All you're thinking is put a shirt on.
Yeah. And I'm a grower, so I'm not going to nude beaches. But either way, I'm just saying they probably got right back on the boat and left. They were like, what? This is America? Let's get the fuck out of here. Like, it was just, I don't know. The people you see on nude beaches.
Do we need to explain to everybody what a grower is?
Well, apparently,
I know what it is.
I know, but I saw a woman, a female comic, very beautiful girl comic. She was 40. She said, I just found out about growers. She goes, for years, I would grab a guy's crotch to see if it was worth it. And if it wasn't worth it, I would not hit him. And I'm just like, you just found out now that we grow? You just found out now.
All this time, she thought I was standing there like an honest Pinocchio. Around 80 nudists were on Pebbly Fairlight Glen Beach near Hastings, East Sussex on Monday morning. They had just stripped off to have a nice day at the beach when all of a sudden a bunch of slimy immigrants rolled up on.
I like how they're slimy, not the people who are nude.
Yeah. Oh, that's just the tanning oil.
Who wrote they were slimy immigrants? Wait a second. Now you got me in. Listen, I don't give a fuck about that sign, but now you got me going. Who are the slimy immigrants?
That's all it took me to embellish the story a little bit to get to you.
Definitely.
Well, Steve thought that was in the article. It was just done.
Yeah, I did think that was the article. Hey, Dougie, do me a favor. Don't read the article. Just do the other thing. Just embellish.
Okay. Well, yeah, they were aged from 17 to 45. Some were men, kept their heads down, but some had little smirks on. Well, it must not have been that bad of a beach, because most people think that. You go to a nude beach or you go to a nudist camp, oh, there's going to be these hot strippers around. No, they're...
They look like us.
And not including Steve, because, you know...
Well, Steve is a, you know, he's a martial arts.
He's fit.
He's a mesomorph.
Can I put that on my website? Steve is a mesomorph, says Brian Scalero. TV comedian.
Yeah, angry. Steve comedian.
And he doesn't say anything bad about anybody.
What I do is I tend to say something that I believe in. If I see something nice to say, I say it. But if I was at Hooters in Las Vegas, where I like to go after I do my little Laugh Factory show, because you can get eggs at 5 a.m. for like $9 with everything. And if I was sitting with you and Dougie, if I was sitting with you and Brian, then I might say, like, what a fucking asshole that guy was, or what a cocksucker. Yeah. But it's not, you know, I don't need to say it to someone's face unless you get in my fucking face.
And I believe in not bad-mouthing people publicly. The whole thing with social media, where comedians attack each other, and like younger comedians attack older comedians on social media, I'm like, oh, so you're trying to piggyback on that guy's 30 years of work. That's fucked up.
Just
keep it in the family. Keep it in the family, as Mark Maron would say. Keep it in the family.
Yeah. Well, we got another naked story. More than 200 half-naked inmates escaped from a jail in Uganda.
I think everybody's half naked there.
That's what I was going to say. How could you recognize?
Yeah. I want to know if it's the top half or the bottom half.
And security forces pursuing a group of 210 inmates who escaped in a massive jailbreak, stripped half naked to avoid being identified as prisoners.
That makes sense. I mean, you can slip right into the community in Uganda by just taking your clothes off. I'm assuming I've never been to Uganda. But you're going to get caught with a prison uniform on. Yeah, you're going to get caught. Get it? You're going to get caught.
I think unless they put a little bow tie, you ever see the guys that have the bow tie, but they're naked from the waist up, and then they could be like a, what do you call it? Chippendale dancers.
Yeah, that's what they should have done. They should have taken their clothes and made bow ties and started dancing. We solved it.
That's
made it funny. Say, take care, everybody.
That's the biggest Chippendale team I've ever seen in my life. 210 of them.
Wow.
And I bet none of the Ugandans are non-growers. I bet you they're all kind of hanging out.
I don't think so. I've seen some black guys in the shower in high school. They're growers. Some of them are growers.
I'm glad you said in high school. You know, some days when I wake up, I call it like you have a good hair day. Some days I have a good cock day. I look down and my penis is the same length soft as it's going to be hard. And that's the day that you want to show it off. Some days it's a good cock day.
Yeah. What would you say that's caused by? Is that the temperature in the room? Just blood flow? I mean, did you take some blood
thinner? As weird as it sounds, a lot of it has to do with, have you peed yet? I swear to God, it has to do with, if you have an erection in the morning, the reason is because you have to urinate and your body is compensating for a way to block the urine.
Exactly. No. Sometimes when I wake up in the morning and I have, because I have to pee three times a night and I get a really good hard on, I like to fuck even though I have to pee. So I'm fucking, but I'm also thinking I got to pee, but I'm so hard. So that's it. I don't take Viagra. Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Thank you.
So you're saying.
I. What did they say? As they say in the streets, Brian, I'll co-sign that.
Yeah, I'll co-sign that.
I'm going to co-sign that.
On your Brian PP erection.
Yeah.
Theory.
There you go.
Are we going to get, by the way, let me come down to what's really important. Is anyone listening to this show or watching it?
I'm not after all the negativity, but it's like, it's, I haven't talked to anybody but the guy at 7-Eleven for 7 months. So I don't have a lot of happy things to say.
No, I think it's great just to have company, but I'd like to see I can't wait to see the comments. I love when people are listening and watching. Please write some comments. I really, I just like, because, you know, I don't know, Brian, I'm not nervous before I go on stage or Doug, but I worry, are they going to accept my point of view?
Yeah, no,
that's what I'm concerned with.
Jim Gaffigan made that great joke saying negativity started with this world. The negativity of America and the world started with YouTube comments. He's making a joke. But really, if you think back, that was when it really first started happening. All the negativity on the internet and people's careers being canceled and the PC culture and the anger and everything that's come out started when YouTube comments first came out in like 2001. It was, that's when things started to go weird, where people would just, there's a 9/11 video where a guy falls out of a window and the first comment is splat. I don't say, oh my God, that guy's family is still alive, you ass. Yeah. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's hard to be positive.
No, you do know, because first of all, the reason I laughed at that was that the lack of humanity, the callousness, not for people to like, oh, he laughed at a 9/11. No. It's the callousness, and the first fucking comment. But the other thing is, comedians, it's enough to get heckled at the show, but then every time you look at your YouTube video, it's like residual fucking heckling.
Yeah,
it's brutal.
Yeah, and they always leave out what they did. And like, if you go to Yelp, you can pretty much tell every Yelp review is leaving out the part with what they did wrong. Like, we were just laughing. I don't think you were. You don't get kicked out of a comedy club for laughing. Something else happened there. You're missing about 18 steps.
Yeah. This comedian, Steve Marshall, was very sensitive, but they left out when the MC brought me up. I swear to God, an MC once brought me up by saying, here's a funny Jew. And this was somewhere where there were no Jews, right? Yeah. Oh, he's sensitive.
I got brought up in Baton Rouge to the Sopranos theme song because my name is Italian. And I'm from New York. And I walked up, it took me about 5 minutes to figure out why they would do that. But I had nothing like that in my act at all.
And right. Like, and what does that have to do with your opening line about how hot it is in Florida?
I thought you were from New York. Well, our next story, massive semen explosion after blaze hits bull artificial insemination facility.
I thought you were talking about 5 minutes before the show.
The bull didn't pee.
Yeah. Firefighters forced to dodge projectiles.
Interesting. That would have been great if all the firefighters got bukkakied by bull semen. That would have been the best story. When you said semen explosion, I thought, when I told you I was taking a shit before, I was really jerking off, so I thought that's what you were referring to.
Oh, he caught it on camera. A huge fire at a cattle breeding facility in Australia has caused thousands of dollars in damage after 1,000 cylinders containing bull semen were destroyed.
I think that there's a lot more tragedy in this world going on than that. But yeah, I hear it.
Written by the same man who complained about the sign in Florida.
It's funny because you're choosing stories that are already funny. They don't need us. You don't need us to make it funny.
Right. We can make it depressing. Funny, I don't know. That's what we should be doing. Brian Scalera and Steve Marshall, make it depressing. I wish I could jerk off in a 50-gallon drum and have 50 of them and then just fucking have my girlfriend trip over it and just, that's enough.
The underline was like, and thousands of women became pregnant. That would have been
funny. Why do bulls have so much hair at the end of their schwanzes? Every time you see a bull, it's got that long hair thing.
I'm gonna bail out of this conversation because I don't like seeing animals' penises. Like when a dog lays upside down, I'm like, come on, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, it is kind of disgusting.
Yeah. And it's like, the fact that dogs' dicks look like lipstick, I stopped right there.
Yeah, that's right.
After the explosion, there was 4,000 bulls. They went, you need this again? Break out the porn.
It's one of the worst jobs ever. Like, as bad as stand-up comedy can be sometimes, at least we're not putting our fingers in bulls' asses and stroking them off. You know what I mean?
Is that how it happens? Hold on a second. I'm going for reality. Is that true?
They don't stroke them off. They have machines, but they do have to inject something in their ass to massage the prostate. I saw it on TV once.
Maybe
actually,
It was probably an Italian channel.
Maybe you and I could just get the machine because I'm over a certain age and I could use my prostate massage.
But you don't have a hairy bull penis.
No. Yeah. Can I get it? Could I get it? Because I'm a little smaller. Could I get it in calf size?
Can I get it in little goat size, please?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You guys are doing wonderful.
Thank you.
Man shoots doctor after ejaculating during prostate exam.
Yeah, that's so strange. I wonder what else happened in that story. It reminds me of, remember years ago, this isn't funny at all. I can't believe it. But the story's funny itself already. Years ago, this guy on the Jenny Jones show announced he had a crush on somebody, and that guy went and killed him. It's like, it sounds to me like two guys figured out they were gay at the same time, and one guy didn't like finding that out and went back and killed him. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's how many transgenders end up getting beaten they end up getting into a situation, and then the guy supposedly goes, "Oh, I didn't realize this." And they're like, "Yeah, you did."
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think happened, but it's not funny, Mike. But it's like, I don't think the doctor put his finger in the guy's ass and the guy just came, which would be funny, but that's not what happened. I'm sure there was a little more going on there.
Let me get that for you.
Why can't you just leave a Yelp review? Don't see this doctor. He makes you come.
You would say,
"Hey, doc, you want to back off? I got an erection. Can you stop?" That's what you would say. When, nobody comes just from a finger on their ass. There's got to be some kind of rubbing involved.
Yeah, I didn't realize a prostate exam takes 20 minutes.
Exactly.
Now, have you guys had it? I've yet to have the doctor. I have to pick a new family doctor, so I picked the lady, because I figured this is coming, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, have you had this done, Steve? Have you had the prostate done? Do you get it done regularly?
Of course. I've had two colonoscopies, if that's how... It's just hard. You can never pronounce it. I've had two of those, and I always ask for the digital. Yes, I do it. Hey, we're supposed to be making the stories funny, not laughing at me. I always ask for because my doctor will say to me, and they don't believe in digital as much anymore because the digital can actually cause bleeding and scraping and tearing.
Great.
What, Brian?
Great. Great. That's all.
I'm a mesomorph. I just want to remember what I learned. Mesomorph, and you get a better erection by not peeing. Okay. Well, and now, but I asked for the digital because I think the PSA, the public service announcement, whatever it is, could be there's a pass fail, whatever. Yes, I get the digital. Absolutely.
You mean the digital, like when you poop in the thing and you send it in for your prostate, or no? That's your. That's your colon cancer thing you got to worry about.
I haven't done that yet. I got enough other medical shit going on. I can't find out another one right now.
Yeah, my doctor didn't want me to bother them about that at this moment with the pandemic.
Yeah. Should I drop my pants? No, it's all right.
We can wait.
Don't bother me with that.
First of all, I don't want to drop my pants because, as I said, I'm a grower. So.
That's the other thing we learned. A grower. That's right. Thank you.
You don't get better erections by not peeing. That's just why you're hard in the morning. That's all.
Okay.
I don't recommend not peeing when a girl's coming over. Pee. Yeah.
All right. Because this is like ask Dr. Scalero. Ask Dr. Scalero. So I should pee.
And now also I'm in my late 40s. One girl wanted me to stand up and fuck her. I'm like, I'm in my late 40s. I'm going to fuck her later. Like, I'm sorry you watch porn and you think we all stand up and fuck, but I'm not doing it. Okay, so that's...
Don't make me go to Foot Locker and have to get shoes for fucking. As a big man, I enjoy standing up on the side of the bed for leverage. We do have a story that perhaps isn't that funny, literally. You guys could just use your comic art. A brain wrapped in aluminum foil washes ashore in a Wisconsin beach.
What washed up?
A brain. An actual brain.
In aluminum foil to keep it fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. Why would they... Was it a human brain?
Yeah, it's a human brain.
So some guy took his brain out, said, I got to keep this fresh. Wrapped it up, didn't have a fridge.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter just left his lunchbox, must have opened up. So spookiness has come early to Wisconsin this year as a washed-up brain was discovered on a local beach. I didn't know Wisconsin had beaches. It must be a beach, a lake beach. Yeah. James Senda found that looked like a brain wrapped in aluminum foil and called police, who responded to the scene. When I first opened it up, I thought it was. I was shocked. It didn't know what it was. Senda said, I walked up to the workers nearby, and they're cops from Wisconsin. They had no idea either. They're fucking morons. So I'm upset the package may be part of a ritual.
I have no idea what to say about that. It just, Steve?
You would, listen, I've been sitting back and going, my God, Brian is great at making things funny. Well, yeah. You know, when I read the notes earlier today, the only thing I could think of, and it has nothing maybe to do with that, is that Joan Rivers said that she wanted to do something new for her husband, Edgar. So she took off all her clothes. It's the wrapping up. And she wrapped herself up in saran wrap. And when Edgar came home, he took a look at her and said, leftovers again. That's the only thing it made me think of, leftovers again. And I watched Silence of the Lambs last night. Yeah. And I got to tell you something. Jodie Foster.
Hot.
Not only hot, but she's fucking great in that.
Yeah.
And he said something about, listen, I you know, Brian, you're great at making things funny. I'm better at going on tangents. I'm free associate. This is my Rorschach test for some of you, so I free associate. And he said that Hannibal Lecter said Marcus Aurelius. He starts quoting Marcus Aurelius to you must judge a thing by its nature, and that's how she's supposed to find Buffalo Bill is to judge him by his nature. And a lot, and what, and he covets things. And then they said what he covets, most people covet things that they see on a regular basis. And that's when they realized, oh my God, she must have been living very close to him. Yeah. So that's all I got on that. It's not funny, but it's informational.
It's
very strange. It's very strange. I have no idea what to think. I just think a guy who would wrap his brain in tinfoil definitely didn't have a brain. You know what I mean? So it has to be somebody else's brain.
Obviously, you would put it in a Glad bag.
Yeah.
Right?
You didn't have a fridge. I mean.
I mean, was he planning on cooking it on the barbecue later? I mean,
yeah, why have it up in the ocean? If you wrap it up, it means you want to keep it. So then why throw it away? It's so strange.
Maybe we look at it the reverse. Maybe he needed a place to put his aluminum foil.
Yeah.
And he just said, oh, if I take this brain out, I can put it around that. By the way, you are a comedic genius because you flipped it to me to go on a tangent long enough for you, Brian, to think of something funny.
That's exactly what I did.
I got to tell you something. Did you go to UCB?
Yeah. My favorite is improv. They always have to say yes and. And there's a great joke in 30 Rock, where they talk about the past, where Tina Fey and Jane Krakowski go back in time and they see how bad she was at it. So they go, all right, what's the suggestion from the audience? Okay, you're Oprah Winfrey and the guy from Sling Blade. And she goes, I sure do like these French fried potatoes. And Jane Krakowski goes, no, you don't, Oprah. I love that joke so much.
In improv, for people that are watching, improv, you're never supposed to disagree. You're not supposed to contradict. You're supposed to build on the scene.
I love that. I love it. Anyway.
By the way, guys, we have somebody visiting on the screen. Our viewers are watching some, but I don't know how they got on. But there's somebody on our screen who I don't know. And Brad, I don't know what Brad's doing.
Brad's probably killed himself.
I think we have somebody taking over Brad's position.
So we're gonna put on somebody who we don't know. Sounds like a great idea.
Well, I have no control. That's why I have a producer. But there we go.
Well, he's actually my friend. The gentleman, that's my friend, Jeffrey Kreiner.
Oh, okay.
I know him. If you want to bring him on or not bring him on, he's a great guy. And he's my friend. He wanted to watch the show tonight.
Yeah, so, just don't
know. Yeah, if Steve wants them on, that's fine with me.
It's up to you, Brian. Let's all take a vote. What do you say, everybody?
If you're a friend of yours, then bring him in. I just want to make sure we weren't bringing on somebody going, I hate these guys. Or the banjo comic. I was the guy with the banjo. I don't want you know, I just want to be careful. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, where is he? What's up? Now we lost Steve, so I don't know. But what a show we have here today. It's just,
it's so professional.
I thank you. You know what I mean? Hey, for all the price of nothing, that's the way it works.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, here I am. I'm back on something. Hey, how come we wanted to bring my friend on and I got cut off? No, yeah. Jeff's a great guy. I mean, unless you want to say, Jeff, come on in 15 minutes. No. When you have, after you've done a few more of these, make these fucking stories funny.
I'm fine with bringing them on.
My strategy changed from the beginning of the show where I have no control to the end of the show where I have no control.
Yeah, let's go with that theme.
And why don't we keep the theme? No, we're good. We're actually, time's up. We're almost done, and I got to go eat. I got dinner waiting and stuff like that. So we're going to wrap the show up, guys.
Wish I was back.
But listen, I appreciate you guys carrying on the show, first of all. Let's give a hand to our guests here, Steve Marshall and Brian Scalauer, everybody. Very funny comics. And by the way, Steve, I enjoy your walks. If you haven't gone, go on Steve's Facebook page. He takes you for a daily walk through the streets of New York City, Manhattan, all over the places. I caught the one episode last time where you were outside that famous adult toy store.
Yeah, the pleasure chest from Sex and the City, yes.
That's St. Charles Street, right?
Yeah. You're great. Charles Street, Perry Street, and 7th Avenue. And I had seen a busload of, it's nothing wrong, but a busload of people, maybe Ohio, wonderful, about 50 years old, wonderful. And they were stopping to go in and buy rabbits. They vibrated.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They got the I Love New York t-shirt. They got the I Love New York shot glass in Chinatown. They got the Wohop. Again, if you don't know, Wohop's a Chinese.
I love
and then Wohop's a Chinese restaurant. And you get the t-shirt. And then they got the rabbit vibrator.
Yes.
So I do that every day. I go at 6:30. Can I give a plug? 6:30 every day. I do Walk with Steve. And the whole point was I just wanted to show everybody that New York City is doing fine.
Yeah.
That most people have not fled the city. All right. And then I give people that are claustrophobic. You know, like Brian, you said you haven't been, you don't get out of the.
Well, LA is not like New York. For New York is always the, if you look at history, New York is always the test for the rest of the country. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in the early 1900s, if it wasn't for that fire in New York, then it changed all the laws of factories.
Right.
So, for example, everything that happens in New York happens in the rest of the country later on. I'm not saying New York is great, but it's the first big city in New York, and it was also the entry point to the rest of the country. So everything happens there first. So when everything bad happened in New York, the rest of the country, because things are political now, and New York is known as a liberal place, nobody was listening to what was happening in New York. So LA is not wearing masks. And that's the reason our numbers went back up. So there's that. So it's like, LA was not handling it like New York did. And L.A. is notoriously, as Paul F. Tompkins said, nobody born in L.A. is an asshole, but people move to L.A. to be the asshole they always wanted to be. You know what I mean? So it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is.
I feel sometimes as a born and raised New Yorker, and I'll define that, this is what I think a real New Yorker is. I went to all public school, PS 217, Dittmas Junior High School, Midwood High School. I ride the subway.
Yeah.
I walk the streets.
You used to.
I take the buses.
Yeah.
I play street basketball in a public. I don't belong to a gym where I have to pay. But I just really, I wanted to let everybody see New York who was claustrophobic, whether you're from there or not, and also in a positive way, see my smile and my happiness. You know, I have that upbeat thing going on, hiding how much
I hate it.
I know, Brian. But that's why you and I would be great. Brian, if you and I could get the odd couple, no, you're great. No, Brian, that's why I adore you. See, you fucking get me, and you let me be me, and I let you be you.
That's what New York is. We are used to adjusting our lives for other people. If there's traffic, if a guy is sitting on the subway next to us eating a pig's head, we're you were used to other people in New York. And then I remember I went to Mississippi and everybody was so spread out that I was like, oh, if you're just watching the news, you're not, you don't know what's happening in your neighbor's house. Like, you're just watching the news and if, and like the world sounds dangerous. But really in New York, it's like everyone's used to affecting their lives for other people or changing their lives for other people.
And also, you're used to fucking danger. Does everybody get that? Like, people are making it sound like there's crime here. Yeah, when wasn't there fucking crime here, okay? Yeah. I started out in junior high getting my fucking lunch money taken by Italian kids, and they weren't. I'm going to say it. If you're easily offended, please keep listening. They were Italian kids. The Irish kids were always fighting with me. They knew I was Jewish, and then we became friends. But the D train was so dangerous. When I rode the D train, you never made fucking eye contact. Your head was down the whole time. But I think in New York City, like you're saying, if I was saying, hey, Brian, let's go grab a slice of pizza at Joe's, and some guy was getting shot, you would casually go, hey, cross the street, some guy's getting shot. I don't want to be part of that. Yeah, all right. Yeah, bang, bang, bang. Yeah. It's an exaggeration. But I really wanted people to see that New York City was not what was being reported on the news.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's all it simply is. Walk with Steve, everyday Facebook Live, 6:30, 7 p.m., whatever. Thanks for mentioning it, Dougie. Thank you. Can we get our websites and everything else where no one will communicate with us?
No, well, go ahead while you're at it. Go ahead and give a plug for your where to
just go to Brian, I know. Brian, I love you so much. No, because we're perfect together because you got to feel what's underneath me behind this smile.
You know, I know you so well. I've known you for a long time.
And I know. There's no way we would get along if you didn't know I had a vicious side underneath all this. I'm a little passive-aggressive. So I'm SteveMarshallComedy.com, SteveMarshallComedy.com. I'm on Twitter at Don't Behave. Anything Don't Behave is me. It means don't behave, be yourself. Don't behave, think for yourself. Don't behave the way everybody tells you to behave, and then be calm, don't behave on Instagram. But can I also say, Dougie, thanks for having me on. And if I was a little verbose tonight, I apologize, but I feel like I've been trapped in the house also. And I just got so excited when I saw Brian and I saw you. I got really excited.
Yeah. I'd say I'm happy to see old friends. And you don't really know how happy you're going to be until you see the person. Like, when I do Zoom interviews on my Patreon, and the minute I see somebody, I'm like, a smile comes across my face, and I'm like, oh, actually seeing them helps, you know?
Yeah, because when we would go in the club, I remember the last time I saw you at Stand Up New York, right? And, you know, believe it or not, you do want to break the ice when you first come in, as confident as everybody may think we are. And Brian, you, like, pulled me aside, and you were like, Hey, Steve, good seeing you. And I was like, oh, man, this, you know, and I'm like, yeah, good seeing you. He goes, oh, man, well, look at what we did with our lives. You know what I mean? And look at this and this. Yeah, but we still, that's the way you are. You're like, right away, it's, hey, Steve, yeah, how you doing, man? Hey, look at what we did with our lives. And they're like, yeah, man, but it's great, right? Yeah, you know what it is. So it's this constant, it's great, but it sucks. It's great, but it sucks. Am I?
The first 15 years were fantastic.
You know, Colin Quinn said, when I hadn't seen Colin Quinn for about 3 years, and Colin Quinn and I start out at the same time, and he goes, Marshall, look what we did to our lives.
I love him so much. Colin goes, why don't you move back to New York, Brian? And I was like, but how do I know she's going to give me spots? He goes, you know what? You're so right. They fucking hate us, Brian. They fucking hate us. That's the kind of comedian I like to talk to. The one who's down for whatever I say to him, and is going to agree with it and knows the truth. I'm tired of this fake positivity. You don't have to be negative, but remember that movie Brain Candy with Kids in the Hall? The whole plot line of the movie was, you can't always be happy. People who are always happy kill people. Cosby was a crazy comedian. Cosby was a crazy comedian and raped everybody. George Carlin was in a bad mood, cursed his head off, raised like 3 daughters. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have all sides. I don't like men who don't cry. I'm like, you don't cry? What's wrong with you? Well, it's not a man. Yeah, bullshit. You cry. You know, it's like, I like honesty. That's all.
And also, when I do my show, you're going to get offended at some things. And you're going to be, oh, this thing they keep starting with. Now, I was uncomfortable during the first few minutes, but then I liked you. Well, You know,
who cares?
That's the way it is with everybody. How many people are in marriages when they said, the first time I met this guy, I thought he was a douchebag, and now I still think he's a douchebag, but I married him, you know?
I wish I was a comedian in the 80s where you didn't have that kind of feedback. The social media, you get everything right away. Somebody was like, I like that last music video you did, but I like the song, not the video. I'm like, I don't care. Why are you trying to talk me out of doing what I do?
You know, this may be the next episode of Dougie I would come back for. Is there too much feedback? There might be too much feedback.
Can I promote my book that one person will buy?
Yes. What is it? You have a book, Brian?
Book. How to Punch a Monkey. How to Punch a Monkey by me. it's in the vein of Brain Droppings by George Carlin.
Yes.
So about a year ago, I just started compiling a lot of my jokes, and I just made a book. It's less than $20. It's like 16, and they have the link on their site of what this thing is. Lulu.com has it, and also Amazon has it. They also has it for Kindle. But that would really be good because I have not worked since the last week of February, and I have MS. So that means my immune system attacks me. So the medicine takes away my immune system. So I have to be very careful about where I work right now with the corona. Mm-hmm. So if you buy the book, it'll be very, very helpful. It's worth it, and it's nice to read when you're taking a shit.
Come on, How to Punch a Monkey. I like to repeat things. There's nothing wrong with promoting How to Punch a Monkey.
By the way, Brad posted it while we were on the we didn't see it, but you'll watch the video later. You'll see it posted the feed and where to go.
Thank you. Now, that would be very, very helpful. If anybody has enjoyed this, it helps out. And that would be very, very nice. And all the proceeds go to me.
And as it should. And, you know, the funny things, too, that your recent podcast, they're very funny. They're nice little clips, nice and short and sweet.
Thanks. Oh, I'm Patreon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm catching them on Instagram. And yeah, very funny. And again, that's listening to an hour and a half podcast. You just have to listen to, about a minute.
I have a Patreon where I do three videos a week, and the skits, some of them are audio, most of them are video. I also interview people. I interviewed Dave Attell and Mike Starr from Goodfellas, and Mike Starr played Frenchie in Goodfellas. David Krumholtz from all the Coen Brothers movies. I talk to a lot of actors and also do comedy, stand-up comedy. So it's a way to try to replace the road income for right now. I just need about 800 more people to join.
There you go.
So I don't know what kind of fan base you have, Doug.
Well, what's the name of the Patreon site again?
It's patreon.com/Brian Scalero. It's only $5 a month. If you don't like it, you fucking cancel it. I don't know what the big deal is. But it'd be very nice. So that and Patreon are the two things I'm conscious. I just released an album, but apparently you get 0.0001% for every stream. So it makes no sense to release an album. It makes no sense. So unless they buy it, you make no money. So I'm sending people to my Patreon or the book. That would be very nice. And some of you are working, and most of us are not. But if anyone's working and wants to get a book to read while they're taking a shit for a month, that would be very nice.
That's a long shit, too, by the way.
I'll read the whole thing.
One sitting. Well, that's it, guys. I want to thank you guys again, for carrying the show in the beginning when we had the technical difficulty on my end. And, of course, for really doing the rest of the show, because you guys, I was excited to get you guys together. I know you guys knew each other from New York, and I had a feeling that I was going to be a little more quiet on this show than any other show. So,
okay.
But there's no quiet part because everybody on a football team has to do their thing. Believe me, without you, this wouldn't have happened.
So you're saying I'm the place kicker. I am the place kicker.
Listen, you could have been the place kicker. Do you know, Brian, that Dougie is a full contact Muay Thai heavyweight champion?
No, but the words Muay Thai just made me hungry. I don't know why.
Boy, Brian, you're good at making things funny.
At the end, I didn't get the pressing on that one. Let me tell you about Chinese people.
Well, that's all we have time for today's show. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us today. And be sure to go and get Brian's book. Be sure to watch Steve's walks on a daily basis through the streets of New York. It's very fun to entertain. And you're right, it is uplifting because you watch the news and you see all these other things happening. But when you watch it, you know, you're like, oh, we're Steve walking around, you know.
And we can chat with each other, you know, which is fun.
Nice. That's nice.
Chat with you.
Doug, you're a good guy, and I hope your North Carolina move goes well. You're doing a good move. You're choosing your wife over your career. And that's one thing I didn't do, which is why I haven't touched another human being in 7 months. So that's the choice. It's important to choose what's important in life, and that is love. You know, it's much more important than career. And you're doing the right thing. You're a good guy.
Thank you,
Steve.
Guys.
Great to see you, Steve.
Oh, Brian, you know it. You get it.
All right, guys. Thanks again. God bless. Stay well. And we'll see you again right here at the same spot. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Wake up!
Wake up!
I'm not psycho!
Wake up!
Wake up!